right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll-free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network because you can handle the truth.
Hey gang, welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio, and today is Monday, so it means Mark Collette. Actually, it's not Monday, we're actually pre-recording, it's Saturday. And so if some monumental event happens on Sunday and it's not reflected in our conversation, that's why. But Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello Patrick, it's great to be back, and I'm pleased you let the audience in on this, because obviously if there is a massive alien invasion on Sunday afternoon, we're addressing something completely irrelevant, we would look rather insane.
Right. Well, what I'd like to start off with today is you have a YouTube channel, which I highly recommend. You put out well-thought-out and scripted videos on particular issues every week. They have a theme. They're thought out. It's not just a stream of consciousness. And they're digestible, tend to be around 15 minutes, but they go over. And the one that you have out there, your most recent one, is about the Holocaust, isn't it?
It certainly is, and I'm pleased you picked up on the style as well. I try to, my videos are usually anywhere between sort of 10 minutes, just over 10 minutes, and up to half an hour. So it's somewhere in that bracket. In each video, I do script them. I try to fill them with as much information as I can. I annotate them with little graphics that come up on the screen, which support what I'm saying, or they're news articles or facts and figures and graphs that support the points that I'm making, to show that everything is, you know, fully researched. And, you know, that I think that helps people a lot as well, because if they see the graphics on the screen, especially if they're news articles, they can look them up later, or they can even pull down the video and you know, search for those articles, or, you know, use the video themselves to show, you know, friends and family if they download it to their phone or a tablet. Mm-hmm. And my latest video is on the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Now, that was
When I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. When we say on the Holocaust, you're not actually examining the Holocaust so much as the Holocaust narrative and its impact on us.
Yeah, well, the thing with the Holocaust is it's very, very difficult to discuss. And you can approach it in many, many ways. And I tried to approach this issue in a way that was really unique, that you don't actually hear many people talk about, because people often debate certain aspects of the Holocaust. They debate the numbers. They debate whether there were death camps or labor camps. How the people died. Was it a typhus infection, or, you know, was it a systematic attempt to eradicate people? And all of those points can be very, very interesting. There's plenty of videos out there. But I attempted this from a very different perspective. I came at it from the perspective that the Holocaust is used as an instrument of white guilt. It's used as a way to make white people feel guilty for merely existing. And I actually call it one of the central pillars of white guilt. And I identify three of those: slavery, colonialism, and of course the Holocaust, which is what we're talking about now. And I actually start from the point that the Holocaust is sort of, it's claimed, it's alleged that 6 million Jews were eradicated by the German people during World War II. And I actually work with those official figures. I say, I'm not a historian, but let's work with the official figures. And then I compare this 6 million and the treatment of this historical occurrence with communist mass murders, crimes, genocides, the numbers involved, and the treatment of those mass murders and genocides. And I point out that even if you take the figure of 6 million as gospel, communism has killed between 100 million at the low ballpark figure and 158 million at the high ballpark figure. So at the low ballpark figure, communism has killed over 16 times the number of people that were alleged to have been killed during the Holocaust. Yet there is no industry surrounding those communist crimes. Children are not taught about Chairman Mao. They're not taught about Pol Pot. They're not taught about Stalin, Lenin, Leon Trotsky. They all know about the Holocaust, but they don't know about the Holodomor. They don't know about the Great Leap Forward, the Great Proletarian Revolution. They don't know about the Red Terror. They don't know about the killing fields in Cambodia. And in fact, when you look at all these things, my conclusion is that the people pushing this message, they don't care about death, they don't care about suffering, they don't care about what people have been through. They care about who died and how the deaths of those people can be used for political gain. And the major thrust of the Holocaust narrative is white guilt. Mm-hmm. It's instilling in young white people a major reason to why they should hate their ancestors, why they should hate, really, themselves, and why they shouldn't want to exist. And I would like to make this as a final point, just to illustrate what I'm saying. Now, obviously, when I produce a video, I tweet out that I have produced a video. I tweet it out and say, you know, this is what I've been up to. You know, this is what I've been doing. You know, what do you guys think of this? You know, go and watch my video. And obviously, I did a tweet about the Holocaust video. I'm just trying to locate it now, unless it's been deleted by Twitter. No, I must have rolled over it. And there was a young lad that came in and tried to debate with me. And he starts off, he can't even watch the video. He says, okay, I can't. The first minute was utter trash. Liberal ideology is not the enemy of the West. And he goes on from there. But his final point is this. If you aren't ashamed of your history, then you don't know your history. Use it to make a better future. Don't cling on it and play the victim. Now, that's a very confused point, but it illustrates exactly what I'm saying. This young white lad is saying that if whites aren't ashamed of their own history, they don't know their history. And that exactly states what I was saying in the video. So although he thinks he's tearing apart my argument, he's actually proving me correct. But his final point's very interesting and contradictory. Don't cling on to your history and play the victim. Now, he's aiming that at whites, but inadvertently he doesn't understand that the criticism he's making, if levelled at anyone, should be levelled at the Holocaust industry. And this sort of rebuttal of my points by this young guy, and you can see this playing out on Twitter, anyone can go and see it, the tweet's there, his replies are there. You can actually see exactly what I'm saying in this microcosm. You can see how this affects Western youth, how it affects their mindset, and how it actually has brainwashed them to the point where they're saying openly, we should be ashamed of ourselves. And that is very, very worrying.
Mm-hmm. So you may be aware there's a Jewish-American professor named Norman Finkelstein, who's relatively well-known, and he wrote a book called The Holocaust Industry. And there's a certain amount of overlap between his book and your video, but his concentration wasn't on the industry's political implications, but its economic, financial, in particular that he characterizes the Holocaust industry is kind of a shakedown of governments and business. And so exploiting the Holocaust in order to get massive reparations to Jews from Germany, to get payments from Bayer or various German companies to so-called Holocaust survivors. He says the number of survivors are as great as would be indicated by all these people receiving survivor benefits, then how could there possibly have been so many victims? He asked that kind of rhetorically. But for you, the Holocaust industry, what you're looking at, I mean, obviously that economic aspect of it exists, but you're emphasizing the guilt aspect of it, the political aspect of it, the destruction of the morale of Western people, which I think is probably the greater damage rather than the, you know, these various payments from governments or companies. Is that a fair characterization?
No, of course. I mean, one thing I'd like to make clear to the audience, before anyone sort of says, oh, but what about? I'm not saying that white guilt is the only thing. I'm saying it's the biggest thing that it is used for. It is also obviously used as a way to make money. Any industry is usually used as a way to make money as well. But I think the money-making is a byproduct. It's a byproduct of the industry. It's not the main thrust of the industry. And ever since the end of the Second World War, the Holocaust has been used. It was initially used across Germany and Austria heavily in the process of what was known as denazification, where they literally pushed it so heavily upon the German and Austrian people to make them turn their backs on their own ideology, their own country, make them sort of hate the Axis forces. It was used then. It is now obviously used in schools. I point out in the video, with a graphic actually, that it is mandatorily taught in all British schools.
So
whilst the Holodomor is not taught at all, and yet 7 to 10 million Ukrainians were starved by the Soviets under Joseph Stalin, that's not remembered. It's not taught. No one would know what the Holodomor is in the UK. If you went up to a school child and asked that, they'd just look at you blankly. Mm-hmm. But they all know about the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, that's a major issue. And the other issue is, of course, it's used as a shield for the state of Israel. So if anyone criticizes the state of Israel for any of their what could be described as terrorist or genocidal actions towards the Palestinians, they use the Holocaust as a shield. And they say, how dare you accuse us of this? We are the victims of the biggest and most terrible act of genocide that's ever taken place. How could you say that we would do such a thing? Please do not call us the monsters. We're the victims. And they use that as well. So there is a range of things it's used for, but the white guilt is definitely the biggest, in my opinion, and it has been used most heavily, promoted by obviously Hollywood, documentaries, books, and throughout my video I do put these things up on the screen. For example, there was one item that I put up on the screen which was very, very telling to the degree that the Holocaust is talked about. Now, if I said to you, how many videos have been made on all communist massacres and genocides, you could probably just about count them on one hand. But one of the things that I put up on the screen was a screenshot from IMDb, and for those who don't know, that's the Internet Movie Database, and the headline is "The 50 Most Moving Holocaust Films." Well, the fact that they managed to make a top 50 shows just how overexposed this one aspect of history is, that they can compile a top 50 most moving films. And there was other points as well, like this was another one from a book website. The 10 essential books about the Holocaust that you didn't read in class. Mm-hmm. So that's 10 books that you didn't read. Mm-hmm. Leaving aside all the ones you were forced to read, here's 10 more that you definitely should. And this just shows the level of overexposure this event has had and how it is pushed relentlessly upon the West.
Yeah, and I think you're correct when you say that it's more than the economic aspect, it is this guilt aspect that is the most damaging, because you look at the payments that have been made by Germany to Holocaust survivors, or the foreign aid from America to Israel, or all these other things that you can put dollar numbers on, And while they may be very substantial, they're not bankrupting the United States. It didn't bankrupt Germany to pay these benefits to the so-called survivors. It's not an existential threat. Yet the white guilt, this guilt, is existential threat. Because of this guilt, and you talk about the three pillars of white guilt, the Holocaust, slavery, and something that maybe Americans might not have thought of as much, colonialism, but I'm sure in Europe that's used. So in America...
Massive in Europe.
Yeah, because we had slavery, the idea that white people should have a government that serves their interest is unacceptable. Because European countries, Britain and France, were colonial powers, the idea that they can refuse massive immigration from not just their former colonies, but from anywhere, is unacceptable. And, well, Germany didn't have slavery, and Germany didn't have colonies to speak of. But because of the Holocaust, the German people don't have a right to a country. And this is existential.
Well, that's a very good point, and I know this is a slight transgression, but this is a massive thing in the UK, colonialism, in that what they always say, and when I say they, I mean the establishment, the internationalists, the people pushing this anti-white, pro-immigrant nonsense, they always talk about colonialism. Well, we went to their countries and we took from their countries. Why shouldn't they come and have some of it back? And that's a massive argument used. But to go back to the Holocaust, as we were talking about it earlier, another issue that I highlighted on the screen with pictures to illustrate my point was a couple of pro-immigrant rallies. One was in the UK and one was in the US. And you see the banners. The banners are, no one chooses to be a refugee. We are all immigrants. And then underneath, never again. And the same in the UK. You see, we stand together against hate. No to racism, no to Trump. Refugees welcome, never again, and a picture of Adolf Hitler. And that phrase, never again, is constantly used by the left, by multiculturalists, by those pushing for mass immigration. And you can see how they are directly conflating the Holocaust with the current refugee crisis, with current... the current push for mass immigration as a way to push for more immigration, as a way to morally disarm people from saying we don't want to take immigrants. Because what they're essentially saying is, if you're anti-immigration, if you're saying no to mass immigration, if you're closing the borders, if you're putting up the wall, you're the sort of person who approves of the Holocaust. You would leave those poor Jews trapped at the mercy of the Nazis. That's what you're doing. And that's a very powerful and emotionally driven argument. It's a powerful and emotionally driven argument that is relentlessly hammered home. And the left use it in a very ghoulish manner. They are open about it. They push it at the forefront of their mantra on immigration, and it's the kind of thing that you can see has a powerful effect, because the people holding these banners, they're usually young students, and it's having a massive and powerful effect on the minds of the next generation of white youth.
Okay, we only have a minute or so before the first break, but there's an issue I want to raise. And your video, you talk a great deal about the numbers, how many people died because of communism, whether it was communist people getting shot in the back of the head, which happened plenty, or people dying from starvation or disease due to really misguided and sometimes intentionally harmful economic policies. Now, this started, the Bolshevik Revolution was 1917, and the Holodomor took place in the very late 1920s and 1930s. And at a time before the Holocaust. And I want to touch on this when we get back from the break.
There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality. There is an ongoing war right here in America. Are you aware that U.S. citizens have been classified as enemies of the state since 1933? Have you recognized that our entire government is really a vast network of interlocking corporations engaged in commerce? Look up Title 28, Section 3002. Tune in to In Defense of Humanity on Saturday nights at 7 p.m. Central Time. Find out what's really going on and learn how to protect yourself and your family as flesh and blood men and women living in a corporate reality.
Corporate media dominates the American opinion. Finding independent voices that counter this avalanche is becoming increasingly difficult. With the endless corruption running rampant throughout our government, independent voices are needed more than ever to battle the offensive against our freedoms and liberties. As a listener of RBN, no one understands this concept better than you. Now it's up to you to do your part. The time has come for you to take action and begin broadcasting the truth to hundreds or thousands of people every month. Sound impossible? Quite the contrary. With pointed slogans from LibertyStickers.com, you can reach countless sleeping Americans unaware that they live in a real-life wonderland. LibertyStickers.com has a huge inventory of political bumper stickers and messages that reflect the truth about our government, our politicians, and the future of America. With so many in stock, there's one perfect for you. Visit us today at LibertyStickers.com. Again, that's LibertyStickers.com. Do your part. Your voice is important. Let it be heard.
And welcome back. And like I was saying before the break, I want to touch on the connection between the Bolshevik Revolution, the Holodomor, and other aspects of the massive death toll from communism with the Holocaust. And, you know, it's one thing to compare numbers, and it's another thing to draw this connection. There was a connection between the communist deaths and the Holocaust. And I know in your video, you're not going into the questions of whether there were death camps and whether there were, or as opposed to labor camps, people dying of typhus, people dying of gas, fake showers and things like that. You're not going into those issues, but you're talking about this Holocaust being used as an instrument to instill white guilt. We don't have to go into the Jewish role in Bolshevism, the Jewish role in the Holodomor. There's plenty written on it. and there's plenty to it. But what I would like to point out is that for the people, not just in Germany, the people in Poland, the people in Hungary, the people in France, there was certainly a perception, whether, you know, you can do another, a whole other show on whether the perception was based on reality or not, but there was certainly a perception that Jews had taken over Russia, and they had, at least for a little while, taken over Hungary in the wake of the First World War and the chaos that ensued the First World War. They had taken over parts of Germany. Bavaria, I believe, in Saxony, had these Jewish-led Bolshevik revolutions. They were very, there was a very powerful Jewish Bund in, or brotherhood, I suppose it would translate to, in Poland. They were politically powerful, they were politically radical, and they were feared. And you can't look at the however many, you know, 5-6 million, however many Jews perished in World War II in isolation from what had been going on around them. I mean, if you want, if on the one hand you want to point fingers at not just the Germans, but French and Hungarians and Poles who were collaborators with the National Socialists, I think you also, you can't look at it in a vacuum. Why was there so much fear or resentment towards Jewish populations? And there was this feeling that there was certainly a perception. No doubt there was a perception that in Germany that Jews were central to selling out the Germans at the Versailles Peace Conference that ended World War I, that they had taken over parts of the country for, you know, periods of months, the same in Hungary. There were these perceptions, and that they were, if you look at Hitler's speeches, he always talked about Judeo-Bolshevism, that they were the force behind the Russian Revolution, the Bolshevik Revolution, and there was a great deal of fear. Would you like to comment on that?
Well, what I'll say is, when we talk about the large numbers of people that died in the Holodomor, and when we talk about the huge numbers of people that died across the whole of the Soviet Union, estimates range from 20 million at the low count right up to 58 million, probably with the Holodomor being the single biggest act of genocide amongst them all, because we're talking 7 to 10 million people there. And it was particularly nasty because these people were starved. And when I say they were starved, it wasn't just a matter of their food supply being cut off. We're talking about people going from house to house, door to door, confiscating food. And when you starve, it takes up to 50 days for you to die. Up to 50 days. Now, that is a long period of time. That's an awfully long period of time. And it would be very, very, a very, very sort of painful, uncomfortable and drawn out death. It's awful. It's unthinkable. And there is clearly an awful lot of planning and, you know, malice aforethought that goes into that kind of death or that kind of horrific act of genocide. Now, we know that the Bolshevik government was something like 85% Jewish. Now, that's overwhelmingly Jewish. So another aspect to this, as you rightly pointed out, would be at the time when these things were occurring, there was a large number of crimes against humanity being perpetuated by groups which had a disproportionate number of Jews involved in those groups, or who could be seen as sort of masterminds of those groups. And I think there would have been a large number of people in Germany and across Europe who would have felt that way, who would have had a resentment against the Jewish involvement in Bolshevism, in the Soviet Union, and, you know, who viewed many of the sort of issues that were going on, many of these massacres, as having a Jewish involvement. And because of that, when you see this in context, it again, you know, has an effect on how these things should be looked at. But what we're talking about here, despite it being true, it's very taboo. They're subjects that people find very difficult to approach.
We'll be back after the break.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AROutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AROutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AROutfitting.com.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
And when we talk about being jailed for talking about these things, this, you know, obviously it's called Holocaust denial, but you don't have to outright deny the Holocaust ever happened. You don't have to deny that any Jews died. All you have to do is question the numbers or question any aspect of the authenticity of the official narrative. And when we talk about going to jail, recently there was an 88-year-old woman, Ursula Haverbrook. She was jailed in Germany for discussing the Holocaust. An 88-year-old woman actually serving a custodial sentence for discussing an aspect of history. That seems absurd, but these are major Western countries. Austria, France, Germany, Canada, they're four major Western powers where you can be jailed for discussing the Holocaust. Yet, if you were discussing the Holodomor, you wouldn't be jailed. In fact, there are people who dispute that to this day. Mm-hmm. I, you know, referenced an article from Sputnik News, which called the Holodomor a hoax. Mm. It actually nakedly called it a hoax and called it anti-Soviet propaganda. And there are numerous historians that claim that it never happened. In fact, I will read you the headline from Sputnik News. Holodomor hoax, Joseph Stalin's crime that never took place, playing into the hands of Ukrainian nationalists, a monument to the so-called Ukrainian Holodomor, one of the 20th century's most famous myths and vitriolic pieces of anti-Soviet propaganda, has been erected in the US Capitol. So there you have it. But no one would be jailed for talking about that. No one would be jailed for discussing the numbers. No one would be jailed for talking about the intent. And you wouldn't be jailed for coming out and specifically saying it never happened. And the same is true. And we've talked mainly today about communist massacres. We've talked mainly about the number of people who died during these communist regimes. And just mm-hmm. as a tangential point here, if you look at Cambodia, around 2 million people were killed by the Khmer Rouge. Now, that seems to pale into comparison when you're talking about the vast numbers killed by Chairman Mao or under the Soviet Union. But 2 million people in Cambodia, that was a country with less than 8 million people at the time, that population of less than 8 million people. So you're talking over a quarter of the population exterminated. You know, they're still finding skulls and bones there now. It, you know, absolutely horrific. But you can question that. You can discuss yeah. whether, you know, the authenticity of those claims, and nothing is done to you. And it shows this horrific double standard that runs throughout, you know, these historical discussions. Yeah. And you literally do have one item of history that is taught as a holy and unquestionable truth. And as I was saying, even if you go past the communist national socialist discussion that we're talking about now, look at the Armenian genocide. You know, the Turks wiped out millions of Armenians, yet the Turkish government to this day deny it. Mm. You can discuss the Armenian genocide. You can talk about the numbers. You can outright say it never happened. And there is no legal recourse. And I don't believe there should be. I believe that anything throughout history should be debated, should be allowed. We should be allowed to openly debate any aspect of history.
Mm-hmm. So I want to comment on a few things. You mentioned the Cambodian killing fields, and that was under the short-lived government of Pol Pot, where they, you know, and they targeted in specific intellectuals, people with educations. This would have had horrible genetic and demographic impact on the country to try to kill and to kill virtually all the intellectuals. Is it ironic? It's certainly noteworthy that after this happened, he was pushed out of power by an invading Vietnamese army that then put in a Vietnamese puppet government. And for the next 18 years, the United States backed a coalition, an anti-government coalition that included Pol Pot.
Yes.
Yes, where he was the main, in fact, he was the main power in the coalition.
And the interesting thing about Pol Pot is he actually, it's important to make clear here that the reason Vietnam invaded Cambodia was because Pol Pot attacked Vietnam first, and secondly, Pol Pot was only deposed as the leader of the Khmer Rouge after he went a step too far even within the Khmer Rouge by purging his own lieutenants. Mm-hmm. He showed no compassion to anyone. He was really one of the most cold-hearted, brutal, and murderous figures that history has ever known. Mm.
I want to pick up on another point. You mentioned how horrible it would be to starve to death. It takes 50 days. And, you know, one of the things I've always found strange with the Holocaust narrative, because the idea is, well, okay, maybe it doesn't involve the most deaths ever, but it was planned and there's something uniquely brutal about it. And yet, part of And they get very, very upset if somebody says, oh, well, these people died from typhoid instead of from fake showers with gas. And, you know, when you think about it, dying from starvation or dying from a disease would be a much more horrible way to go than to be euthanized in a fake shower room. That's always been something that's been a little bit logically inconsistent or hard to fathom there. They do that.
Oh, yeah, I mean, let's make it clear. Being killed is never pleasant. But the point that I made, or I would make on this, is that the Holocaust, and I made this point in the video also in my presentation, that the Holocaust is painted as a point of unique suffering, as if the event itself is unique and somehow more evil, more bad, more terrible than any other historical occurrence, any other number of historical deaths. But as you rightly said, that simply is not true. The Holodomor is far more ghoulish and gruesome mm-hmm. in its methodology than the Holocaust is alleged to be. The mass starvation of these people and the fact that squads went door to door, house to house, confiscating food, and people who survived that event often survived by having to resort to cannibalism.
Yeah,
that it's not just brutal and inhumane, but the survivors, to survive, they had to almost undergo a process of dehumanization and have to stoop to levels of barbarity mm-hmm. that are really unthinkable. Having to eat, people right. you knew, maybe even members of your own family, just to survive because a government is imposing conditions where your food is being taken away. It really is unthinkable. And this isn't something that happened in a prison camp.
No.
This is something that happened to an entire nation.
Yeah, and I want to make a point on that.
An entire nation was treated this way.
You know, this was a famine, and you mentioned a variety of people who call the Holodomor a hoax. And I don't know if they're saying that it's a hoax in that there was no mass starvation or a hoax in that it wasn't basically planned. It wasn't man-made catastrophe. I think it would be pretty flat-earthian to say that there was not mass starvation. But and of course, famines do take place from time to time, and you can look at examples. You know, you can look at examples of famine in times of war, where there's the capability of moving food around, moving people around breaks down. You can look at famines in more recent times in Africa, in Ethiopia. Maybe there's food in Addis Ababa, but some region, some province 500 miles outside the capital has famine. But the state of Ethiopia has such low capabilities that, okay, it can't stave off famine. The USSR in and around 1930, it was not at war. It was actually, even though the West was suffering from the beginning of the Depression, the Great Depression didn't impact the Soviet Union. This was one of the things they were very proud about, that they had, their industrial production was rising, their economy was expanding. And yet, in a country that's got railroads crisscrossing it, that's got, was manufacturing more tractors than any other country on earth, that you have a famine in not just a remote corner of the country, but really in the Ukraine might be Ukrainian and not Russian, so to speak, but really Kiev was the birthplace of the Russian nation. This was very integral to the Russian Empire and to the Soviet Union, very integral to it. How could you have a famine there and not in the rest of the country, where you have prosperity in the rest of the country? There had to be malevolence.
No, of course, everything you said is correct. I mean, when you talk about the denial, I mean, I've just looked up some of the these instances. You know, in 2006, a left-wing group in the Ukraine published a document called "The Myth of the Holodomor." And it claimed that Ukrainian nationalists and the US government were responsible for creating a myth. And there is this open debate about this topic. And as you so rightly said, there really shouldn't be any debate about this at all, because it's something that it was so widely reported upon at the time. And it's something that really, all the newspapers at the time covered this. And I put some clips of these newspapers. It's not something that happened and then people learned about it retroactively, as is the case with the Holocaust. But this was something that was chronicled as it went on.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned a couple of other massive catastrophes under communist governments. You mentioned the Great Leap Forward. And I don't know if you mentioned it, there was also the Cultural Revolution. And I don't know if you have the numbers on how many people died in the Great Leap Forward, which was in the later 1950s in China, maybe into the early 60s. And then the Cultural Revolution, which was from the later 60s into the 1970s. With, the Holodomor, there does seem to be some sort of ethnic aspect to it, where you had a Politburo at the time that was, even though it was under Stalin, who was not Russian, by the way, he was Georgian, but I believe he was married to a Jewish woman. He later had tense relations with Jews, but it was a Politburo that was dominated, had a lot of Jews on the Politburo, and the forced collectivization of agriculture, which really was the policy that started this famine off. This was something that came from, this was what Trotsky had been pushing. He was in exile by the time the policy was put into place, but it was the Trotskyite wing, which was thoroughly Jewish, which had been pushing for this mass collectivization of agriculture, which led to a collapse of agricultural production. In China, the Great Leap Forward is a little bit interesting, and maybe people aren't very much aware of it. China was not a very industrial country, and it had gone through World War II, where the Chinese state had been defeated in its most populated areas, in its core central areas, by Japan, which was industrialized. And, of course, the areas that, what industry China had was, during World War II, it was being occupied by Japan. And what areas that the communists were pushed to, the communists and the nationalists under Chiang Kai-shek were pushed to, didn't have much industry. And so Chairman Mao had this idea that let's have, we might be invaded again. Let's have industry everywhere. Let's have agriculture everywhere. So he was pushing for these rural villages to produce their own steel. And he was pushing for cities to raise, to grow their own rice. And of course it was a disaster. They had quotas, and to the extent that quotas for steel production could be met out in the countryside, it was making steel that wasn't worth using, that was completely unusable, and the whole thing resulted in a massive famine. It was certainly the fault of Chairman Mao and his communist government, and it killed tens of millions of people. But it wasn't as if Chairman Mao was saying, let's kill the Chinese people. He wasn't saying, let's kill the intellectuals, which actually happened later in the Cultural Revolution. It was just pure stupidity. You can kind of maybe understand why he got that idea, but it was a stupid idea. What do you think about that, Mark?
Well, the Great Leap Forward is actually a very interesting period of history. Now, I'm not an expert on it, but I have done some reading on it. And it's sort of estimated, you know, estimates are all over with, there's such a huge number of deaths involved. A low-end estimate would be something like 18 million, but a high-end estimate, something like 56 million. You know, it's or even more. You know, you're talking huge, huge numbers of people. And although you've said it's not genocidal, during that time, there is evidence that suggests that during the famine, some of those famines, some of the deaths, some of the people, or large numbers of the people that died, were people who were in any way resistant to the Great Leap Forward, mm-hmm. any way resistant to Chairman Mao's rule, anyone who would have nationalist leanings, who wasn't a communist. And it was used selectively in some areas mm-hmm. to destroy certain parts of the population, you know, during that period. And, you know, not all of the deaths during that period were of starvation. There was still millions of people who were beaten or tortured to death or executed, as well as an estimated 1 to 2 million people who committed suicide.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, in China, which is compared to the Russian Empire, the Chinese Empire was much more homogeneous. In outer areas, you had Mongols, you had Manchurians or other minorities, Tibetans, but it was overwhelmingly Han Chinese, whereas the Russian Empire had many more ethnic groups, very complicated, and of course you had a minority ethnic group that had taken control. I want to talk about China when we come back from the break.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
For the past 14 years, it's been my privilege to host the National Intel Report on RBN, to offer a platform to interview exceptional guests, to provoke critical thought, and examine evidence, whether real, fake, or somewhere in between, and allow our audience to call in and participate with your input and questions, in order to help us all reach an educated decision and arrive at our own truth. Our world has changed. It's now been turned on its head. Real is now considered fake, and mainstream fake is now pushed as real, rather than any clear thinking, consensus, or rationale.
Those few remaining beacons of light, the ones still shining through the mainstream media lies, propaganda, and deception, are being viciously attacked at every level through attempts at censorship, threatening advertisers, jailing hosts, and even killing journalists brave enough to speak the truth to you. We are in a war for our very freedom and existence, and through these despicable acts, freedom haters, collectivists, and communitarians have shown they will stop at nothing to blot out these last few beacons of light. Truth is becoming increasingly more difficult to unmask, just as the term unmasking itself is spoken by those usually anonymous sources. They promote their lies, wishing to mask the truths by ignoring it, vilifying it, or conspiratorializing it into a black hole abyss.
Regrettably, RBN has reached the tipping point, and through internal audit and actuarial review, it has now been determined that the only life raft of survival to this network is to go the way of PBS, that being audience-supported. Like a cornered animal, the left with veracity is pulling out all the stops with every effort to effectively blacken our beacon forever. Help us, folks. Help yourselves. Don't let our light stop shining. Our motto has always been, because you can handle the truth. It's time to review your budget, folks. If you want the truth to keep flowing through RBN, go to republicbroadcasting.org and become a regular monthly donor of 30, 40, 50, or 100 or more a month and ensure you keep the truth flowing.
In China and also in North Korea, the targeted populations are typically not targeted by their ethnicity, but by class affiliation. You know, the class that they're in, the class that they were in before the revolutions took place or the governments took power, or class affiliation of relatives, things like that. And so, yeah, there could have been millions of people targeted in the Cultural Revolution who were targeted because they were seen as being petty bourgeoisie or something like that.
Well, yeah, and as you, well, it was, and there was also a case where anyone that spoke out against it, anyone who didn't hand over food when told to hand over food, there was also some underreporting as well, because obviously people knew there was a famine going on, and they knew they were likely to have grain confiscated, so they would underreport what they produced so they could keep more for themselves, so they didn't starve. And anyone who was found to be underreporting, they were done away with. There really was a range of different... range of different reasons why people were killed. There were militias, people were beaten to death. It's estimated that something like 10% of those lynched by militias were actually buried alive as punishment. You know, these beatings and these executions were, again, very, very brutal, gruesome, and the deaths were not swift, they were not clean. But as I said, it's estimated 10% of those who were targeted, you know, who didn't die of malnutrition or starvation or disease from malnutrition, they were actually buried alive.
Okay, well, we are getting close to the end of the show. I want to give you a chance to maybe just summarize the main reason you think people should look at your video and tell them how to find it.
Well, thank you for having me on again, Patrick. It's been a real pleasure. And again, I'd like to have you back on this week on the alt-right soon.
Oh, that would be a pleasure.
You can find the video on my YouTube account. That's just search Mark Collett, C-O-L-L-E-T-T. It's up on there. But I think the most important thing to come out of today's discussion is that you can see how the establishment is pulling the wool over everyone's eyes. They are selectively choosing historical occurrences that fit their narrative and push a specific line of thinking, which is, of course, white guilt. And I think today we've pretty much comprehensively shown that the biggest killer during the 20th century was communism, by far, by a factor. If you're looking at low ballpark figures, so you know, 16 times the number of people died at low ballpark figures due to communism than died during the Holocaust. And this shows the huge hypocrisy that the media, the press, the Hollywood, the establishment, they all indulge in this huge hypocrisy. Because just to reiterate, it's not about the numbers of people dying. It's not about the suffering caused. It's about how they can use that suffering, how they can use those deaths to push a very damaging and anti-Western political narrative.
Thank you very much for being on the show, and I look forward to you coming back again next Monday.
Excellent. I'll see you then.
See you then. And until then, stay tuned for more exciting episodes of National Bugle Radio.
And now, a word from our sponsor.
Hey, gang. Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Koshertify, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Koshertified app can make a huge difference for your future.
We are the American Freedom Party. This is the most urgent time in the history of Western civilization. In the year 1900, white people of European descent comprised 35% of the world population. Today it is less than 9% and falling fast. Europe is being overrun with Middle Eastern immigrants, and America's founding stock is rapidly being replaced with third world peoples from around the globe. For the last 50 years, every influential institution in this nation, our schools and universities, our media, our churches and our employers, have promoted policies and principles that teach whites to be ashamed of their great heritage and birthright. We, who in the 1950s, the 1960s, and 1970s were the world's dominant force, are now